This is a recording of a sermon given at the First Unitarian Church of St. Louis.
It's a very short sutra, Buddhist scripture, which called the Dona Sutra. A Brahmin named Dona asked the Buddha, sees features on him that impress him, and he says, are you a god? And then he asks, are you a divine incarnation? Are you a sorcerer? Are you some great kind of man? And to each of these, the Buddha responds, no. And then he says, remember me as awakened. Today, I invite you to wake up. Now, I want to make clear, sleep is good. I've read many scientific, theological, and popular studies on the role of dreaming and sleep, and it is clear that we need sleep and that great good work is done while we are sleeping, while we are dreaming, we are weaving and reconnecting and reknitting our bodies physically, we are reknitting and reweaving our thoughts and minds and emotions. It is essential. In Hindu theology, there are often images of the divine beings of gods asleep. One of the most sublime and supreme of these is Vishnu. Beyond all time, beyond all samsara and suffering, upon the lotus throne, laying down asleep, and the waters, the great ocean beneath him. I wonder if this is what the Spirit of God was doing before the opening lines of Torah and Bible, sleeping. But at some point, God wakes up, and we too must wake up. We must start the day. We must incarnate. We must create. There's a story, famous story I've perhaps told before about little Johnny, who's sleeping in, and his dad comes up and knocks on the door. John Sr. knocks on the door and says, Johnny, get up, it's time to go to school. And Johnny says, I don't want to go to school. And his dad says, you have to go to school. Why don't you want to go? And he goes, everyone's mean to me there. The kids are all mean to me. The teachers are mean to me. Every single one is mean to me, and there's just too much work to do there. And his dad says, look, John, you have to go. You have to go to school now, and you've got to be there now. And Johnny says, give me one good reason why I should go to school. And he says, because you're the principal of the school. They're depending on you. One of the key messages of Unitarian Universalism is that we have to wake up and become responsible in the world. I'm speaking today from Buddhism. But be clear, I do not speak as a Buddhist teacher. I speak as a Buddhist-influenced Unitarian Universalist minister, and the Buddhism that I share is a UU-bent version, shaped by the values of this long and glorious heritage and tradition. I invoke, ultimately, though, beyond even our tradition, universal truths, that truth that is beyond all labels, described by all the thinkers and visionaries, the prophets that were raised up in our opening hymn. And I hold up the words of Dr. Howard Thurman. I don't know if you know Howard Thurman, great American intellectual, was an African-American leader in the 20th century, founded an interfaith congregation in 1944, a great thinker and writer, and his echoing words that have always been, long been a touchstone for me. Do not ask yourself what the world needs. Ask yourself what makes you come alive. And then go and do that, because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Wake up then. Find connection. Find reconnection. Find wholeness and completion and the power of deep, deep peace. I've often noted that you should follow your bliss, but you must find a way to pay for it first. For rent and food and clothing and retirement all call to us and needs. But ultimately, we must follow our bliss, our deepest spiritual wholeness and strength, no matter what it is we are doing, to earn money, to make a living, to change the world. I was told a story, so I have three myths about Buddhism, three lies about Buddhism that I want to confront. which I do not think are applicable in this congregation. And I was told a story by a member of our congregation. One day he and his wife had the opportunity of having dinner with a Buddhist monk. And in the dinner, the Buddhist monk noted something about this very worldly Unitarian, very active in the world, and said, "You must free yourself from desire. Desire causes suffering." This, of course, is a basic Buddhist teaching. It's like saying the sky is blue. But our Unitarian responded, "Desire is what makes life interesting. Why would I want to be freed from desire?" And I've had other Unitarian Universalists, other people tell me, "I'm not interested in Buddhism. It's all about squashing your emotions or being free from feelings, except for just feelings of calmness and peace. It's about denying life. It's not interesting." Now, many people are drawn to Buddhist teachings and Buddhist practice because they are looking for peace. When I was a very young man, young teenager, filled with thoughts, my mind always running, filled with desire and anxiousness at a certain level. It was always there, maybe not quite as much as some of my heavy metal friends who just seemed to be wanting to bang all the noise of their heads out. I had a little bit more calmness than they, but still I was seeking peace, and so immediately resonated with the notions of calm and peace that are evoked by Buddhist writings and teachings. To sit in calm state of mind, this is good. It is essential. To find quiet times is the heart of the practice of Buddhism, but it is not the wholeness. Spiritually awake person sees the whole world, the fullness of life. The image of the Buddha is not simply of someone who woke up under the tree and then vanished. It is someone who then spent years, decades, walking through the world, speaking to people about their suffering and their pain, confronting those who were filled with war and violence, grief and loss, and being open to it and present to it. Buddhist teachings I hold up, see the wholeness of the person, a person who sees the whole world, the fullness of life, not only the beauty of the green bud upon the spring tree, but also the fullness of the dense, humid leaves in the summer and the yellow, dying leaves of fall and the bare branches of winter and the rotting trunk returning to the soil. The whole circle of things. The Buddha's teachings I hold up are never repressive but inclusive. In the sutras, the Buddha speaks of eliminating the suffering that's caused by desire, but not eliminating desire, not repressing it or pushing it down, but being free from its clinging grief and endless dissatisfaction. It means to be awake to what it means to be human. Awake to both the pleasant and the unpleasant, not being pulled by them, not being repulsed by them, not being dragged in or clinging to one and pushing the other away, but present with all of it and able to hold it in a more complete peacefulness and well-being. The ultimate ideal of the Buddha, a fully awakened state, is mysterious ultimately. Beyond description. It's why he argues with that man who's trying to give him labels in the Dona Sutra. Are you a god? Are you a sorcerer? Are you some kind of man? And to all of these, even to human being, he says no. It's beyond labels. Just present to what is. Thich Nhat Hanh emphasizes that in that reading this morning. When you're mindful, when you're fully alive, when you're mindful, you are fully alive. You are fully present. It's very difficult to be fully present. Our minds are always pulling us and distracting us and putting labels on things. Speaking about getting in touch with the wonders of life that nourish you and heal you. And when you're mindful, you can recognize and embrace and handle the pain and sorrow in you and around you. To transform suffering into compassion, to transform joy into sympathetic joy, to balance the two. The teacher, Buddhist teacher, Pema Chodron talks about a Tibetan practice called Tonglen, which is to begin with suffering. So in our joys and sorrows each week in worship, we hold up particular examples of suffering as well as of joy and success and hope. It's to be open to that suffering first, and then to extend compassion and a desire for healing and wholeness in the midst of that. It reverses the normal tendency that we have to get away from things that are uncomfortable and painful. We talk about the people who come into this congregation. Sometimes we have people, we have extended living facilities for people with mental illness right here on this block, and some of them come into the building just to get coffee in the morning. And there are some of us who get afraid of those people. We feel anxious around them. We're not sure how to react or how they're going to react. That fear comes in and starts to put up barriers between us instead of being open to these human beings with compassion. How to be open, how to be present, and still see the wholeness. Not to be too overly sensitive, too overly generous, not to be pulled into the little stories of grief, but to see them in the larger context of being human. I have some colleagues who do prison ministry, Unitarian Universalist prison ministry. And one gave me a little letter by a man who is now incarcerated, but knows that when he is released, he wants to be a very different person than the one that came into jail. He came to Buddhist practice only noting that he wanted some calm in his day, and he heard that this Unitarian Universalist nurtured Buddhist ideas. And in one of the really early realizations that he had in those moments when he was sitting in silence, listening, was how angry he was. He realized in that moment of silence that anger was with him every moment of the day. It followed him, tugging his sleeve, getting him into trouble all the time. And here's a poem from another Buddhist practitioner in jail. In this poem, the word celli refers, of course, to the other person in his cell, that sleeps in his cell, uses his room. Wah, 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 the prison guard with a mouth of marbles. Early morning wake-up call. Concrete, steel, prison cell, home. Morning's first light shining through window. The sound of distant toilets flushing. Celly stirring. Time to get up. Thursday, Thursday. Thursday. Quiet like a cat. Get dressed. Brush my teeth. Clink of the toothbrush against the shelf. Careful. Mindful. Rumble and hiss the ventilation duct. I breathe. The prison breathes. I am in the belly of a great beast. Wash my face, comb my hair, make a funny face in the mirror. All of us, denim-clad corpuscles careening through the capillaries of the beast. Thursday, Thursday, Thursday. Guards at the dining room door, dour faces watching the animals. Chow hall, blast of moist heat, smell of fried eggs and wet mops. Noise, bad manners, dirty dishes, ruined food. Take the long capillary back to my cell. Thursday, Thursday, Thursday. Celly is at work when I get home. Peace, solitude, a hot cup of coffee. It's great to be alive. Folded blankets, one for the floor, two to sit on, posture, breathing, labeling, rumble and hiss of ventilation, distant toilets, radio. I breathe. The beast breathes. I awaken the Buddha. In this poem, he notices the sources of anger, he notices the sources of irritation, but he also notices it's good to be alive. He notices the moments of peace. It's not about being free from good feelings, but holding them in balance, in wholeness, and being present with each moment of his life, not letting it move by, but being driven. The goal is to be free from being controlled or determined or defined by all our feelings in any moment, free and whole. And this brings us, of course, to the second lie about Buddhism. It's not simply about crushing your emotions. It's not just about sitting either. It's not about navel gazing. It's not about doing nothing. And it's not about only thinking. You may have seen a t-shirt. It's got a picture of a seated Buddha, and the words below it are, "Don't just do something, sit there." There are many of us who are full of busyness. We are trying to do things. See people all the days now. Now, there's almost no time where people are just doing nothing. They have a little cell phone, something going on. Our mind's always busy, always humming, something to do. And there's something to be said about being quiet for a while. I have practiced Buddhist meditation for getting close to 15, 20 years now. And I do that when I'm sitting on the bus. I do it when I'm standing in line. Have moments of just listening. I was waiting for a movie last night and just sitting, standing in the line, waiting. I started breathing and listening to the sounds and the voices and the feelings around me. To be present, to be awake is part of the practice. But then one must take the fruits of that out into the world, out into the capillaries, out into the mess hall, or the classroom, or the office, out into the places where things are difficult and messy, in the hospital, in the moments of panic, when we're listening to the news and the stories of terror and violence in the world roll through our minds. To bring that compassion and awareness, remembrance of joy and peace, as well as compassion for suffering, and then do something. To act fully aware. There's an interesting moment in the Christian scriptures and late in John's gospel. Peter is sitting there adoring Jesus. He's like meditating on Jesus, and he talks about his love for Jesus. He affirms this three times, and each time Jesus says, do something. He says, feed my sheep, or pasture my sheep, or pasture the lambs. It's about getting up and doing something. Don't just sit there. It's a Sufi story about a guy who comes to visit a Sufi master, and he says, I trust God so much, he's trying to impress the master, that I did not even tie my camel outside because I know God will keep my camel. And the Sufi master says, tie your camel, you fool. God doesn't have time to be bothered by doing what you could do for yourself. And there's a Jewish story, too, about the guy who's looking at retirement, and he realizes he doesn't quite have enough money for retirement, so each day he kneels down in his prayers and he says, oh God, help me win the lottery. Please let me win the lottery. And one day he hears a voice come back and God says, give me a break. You gotta buy a ticket first. You gotta do something, is the message. You gotta take your spiritual practice out into the work of your life, into the moments of your days. Tonglen, that idea of thinking about suffering, about opening yourself to the suffering and wanting to heal the suffering of others, changes how you talk to other people. When you listen to people and you say, how are you? You don't want to just hear fine and then skip over it. When someone says, oh, I'm doing okay, you say, well, what's going on? And you listen with compassion, with an openness. You ask, how are things with your spirit? It's a powerful question to be open and to be present. It's a way of being active in the world, not simply just listening, not just thinking about it, but doing something, showing connection, showing presence, to breathe in pain and then to breathe out love. So it is about being engaged in the world, and so teaching or working in a hospital, So it is changing the diapers of a baby, doing work that has to do that comes out of our compassion and desire for the world to be a better place, and we bring awareness and wholeness into all of that. It is not a place in the world where there is no suffering, but a place where we can turn suffering into compassion and connection. And that's the last lie about Buddhism, is that it's just about the individual. So often the image of Buddhism is of the Buddha isolated and alienated, this image of this serene being sitting there in perfect separation from the world. It's that moment of awakening under the tree. Or it's now been sort of enhanced into a radical spiritual moment. And that's why Thich Nhat Hanh is very good about taking both the Christian image of the kingdom of God and the Buddhist image of the pure land and saying it's not a place without suffering. It's a place where all is whole, balance, and at ease. A greater sense of wellness. Really beyond all understanding. It's that peace that passes all understanding that Paul evokes in his epistle. A deeper peace in the midst of turmoil and difficulty, when people are turning against you, people are protesting and disrupting services, where people are engaged in violence and warfare in the world. How can you be at peace unless it's a peace that transcends all understanding and is somehow part of the suffering, present with it, making a connection between you and the violent people, between you and the hurt people, between you and the victims and the perpetrators, bringing all of it into a greater wholeness of humanity? This is what our religion has always been about pulling all humanity, all creation, all living things back into one great wholeness, changing everything. Anthony DeMello, a great Catholic teacher and teacher of kind of universal spirituality, said people should think less about what they ought to do and more about what they ought to be. If only their being were good, then their works would shine forth brightly. So it begins with this awareness, and then the awareness turns into action, and the action flows out into connecting and creating community. When the Buddha said, hold to yourself as the only lamp, he also talks about seeking refuge in the truth, in the Dharma. He uses the word Dharma, which is truth, reality. But Buddhists, when they become Buddhists, especially when they become monks, they seek three refuges. The refuge is in the Dharma, which is the truth, the Buddha, which is the example of the person who was fully awake to truth, and then in the Sangha, which is the community of all those human beings who are seeking to follow the Dharma and the Buddha. The Sangha is essential. Community is essential. In Islam, one of the key ideas is the Ummah, the community, the unity of human beings who are practicing the way. In all religions, this notion of our connectedness with one another, the creation of a community, is essential and vital. And so Unitarian Universalism is not simply about the freedom of the individual in your own religious journey, but the freedom of the individual to create a more vital and powerful and transformative community in the world, and that is what we are doing here today. I met a woman once. She had lived her life, a very busy life, very successful life. She had an office job and had three children, just a bit over the 2.5 average of an American. She had a husband with a very stable life, and then one day she had a friend who asked her, do you have a cousin visiting? Because I've seen your husband several times with the same woman, and it's not you. And she confronted her husband about this, and he said, she's only a friend, a secret friend that he hadn't been telling her about, and been hanging out, spending a lot of time with. And then only a few weeks later, she found that she had cancer. She had melanoma in her skin. And the doctor, of course, talked about potential of death. And all of a sudden, this world that she thought was so perfect just collapsed and crumbled, and she was filled with terror. She had been raised as a Unitarian Universalist, and somehow in the midst of facing all these difficulties and trying to repatch together her marriage, she started returning to the Unitarian Universalist Church, and she started connecting with people. She came back looking for a sense of peace, a deep sense of calm wholeness that she hungered for, and she began to realize how long it had been that she had been doing too much in her life and not thinking about why, not thinking about the quality of her life, giving away all her time and not realizing that all of it was her time and her life. She wasn't loving her husband. She was just doing things with him. She was not loving her children, just doing things with them. She was not living her life. And she began to wake up, and she shared her life story and how important it was to find a community of people who encouraged her awakening. So I encourage you today not to seek to be a god, not to seek to be an incarnation of God, not to seek to be a sorcerer of great power or some marvelous form of human being, but simply to wake up, to be yourself, fully awake and alive here in this community of people who are all seeking to wake up to compassion and peace and deep, deep love.
You have been listening to a sermon recorded at the First Unitarian Church of St. Louis.